Hey everybody, welcome to the Common Sense Show. This is Dave Hodges, your host. I'm the host that is hopefully leading the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. It's really great to be with you. We have a terrific guest for you today in Susan Bradford. We're going to be talking about a topic that is really near and dear to my heart. We have a bunch of topics up on the roster here, but time permitting, I don't think we're going to get to all of them, but there's always another part. But we're going to be talking about Obama's involvement in being an agent provocateur leader in the January 6th insurrection. We already know about Ray Epps. I had one of Ray Epps' neighbors write to me and say, "Oh, Dave, he's a nice guy and a patriot." Excuse me. I saw the video. There's no taking back what he said. He was provoking people to go on Capitol grounds the day before. And they even knew it, and they called him a Fed. So Obama's gone way beyond that. We're going to get into that with Susan. And time permitting, we're going to be talking about other things that Obama's doing in conjunction with Bush. And he's trying to keep money out of your pocket. So hopefully we'll get both of those covered today. But we're going to definitely start with the January 6th issue because it's very, very timely. The first part of this program is brought to you by Noble Gold. And Noble Gold is here to help you diversify. And the worst thing you can do right now is leave all your money in the bank, go traditional, because the economy is going to hell in a handbasket. And I don't know what the end is going to look like. I mean, if the government stops printing money, we'll have a complete economic collapse. If they keep printing money, eventually we'll hyperinflate. What that tolerance level is for our currency, I don't know. It really depends, honestly, how many nations we can keep in the petrodollar satellite group. In other words, they got to buy the dollar before they can buy oil. That's evaporating rapidly. And so I don't know what that date is, but I know what they can do. They can do for you what they did for me. They can get you into gold, silver. They can back your IRA or 401k with precious metals. So if your bank or business that sponsored it goes broke, you don't lose your investment. This is why you owe yourself a conversation, and there's two ways to get a hold of them. You go to goldbeforelate.com, and you can have them send you material. They won't pester you. They're very, very soft sell. Or you can call them at 877-646-5347. Again, that's 877-646-5347, or go to gold before, and that's the word before, goldbeforelate.com. I'd recommend doing this. If you have assets to protect, you've got to diversify, and you've got to go with something that stands the test of time, which is precious metals. Anyway, Susan's on the line with us. Susan, I'm glad you're here, and things are taking a very nasty turn towards the American people. And January 6th is kind of the catalyst date for this. It's the Reichstag fire. As my friend Doug Thornton, recently retired from DHS, likes to say, he calls this the Reichstag fire, and I totally agree with him. So we're going to be talking about Obama and his people. You know, let me ask you a question. Is Obama set up shop close enough to the White House he really has day-to-day control?
He was at one point. I think he didn't want to leave Capitol Hill. I don't know where he is housed right now. But it wouldn't surprise me if he were.
Yeah, I know when he left office, he set up very close to the Capitol, like blocks away.
He did.
Yeah, it just...
That he did.
Okay. Well, he's still... This is like his third term, isn't it?
It is. I think he... Trump may have been sort of a half a term. He was kind of working behind the scenes there, too. But I think Biden is definitely his third term.
You know, before we jump into this, I'm going to present a position statement, and then I want you to either support it or to attack it. And I don't get offended easy, believe me. It's my belief that Trump came into power sincere. He did away with the TPP, which was handing over the control of the government to corporate interests, and he destroyed it. He brought manufacturing back from overseas. Those are both huge no-nos with the deep state and the globalist bankers. He took them on head on, and he was winning. But somewhere along the line, he lost his steam. I don't know if he's Epstein compromised or what happened to him, but he clearly lost his steam in his last year of the presidency. But in the first couple of years, he kicked the butt of the very people you and I talk about.
Yes, he did. I would agree with that. I think that the Rothschilds, prior to his election, the Rothschilds had promised to bring forth Nasera Gessera. With to that end, they were going to restore integrity to the government. They were going to unleash new prosperity programs, and they were going to, you know, begin to do right by the American people. Donald Trump was leading the effort to do so. And I think what they did is they waited until they were, like, they could kind of reposition themselves to kind of prevent these positive changes from taking place. And I think in the meantime, while Trump was trying to implement a positive agenda for the people, they were obstructing him every bit of the way. So you can actually see this in the lobbying reports, like on the one hand that they're raising money to support Trump, and on the other hand, they're supporting his opposition.
Oh, that's classic. We had control both sides of the narrative. Yeah, exactly. That's absolutely classic. I mean, we see it today. You look at big tech. Republicans go on Fox News and put down big tech. Oh, this is terrible. And then they go back to Congress and accept their campaign donations.
Correct. And I think the Heritage Foundation received, I think they've came under fire for this, for taking money from Google and Amazon, yeah, and all the big tech companies that are censoring conservatives.
Yeah, I remember when I was first exposed to the idea that the early industrialists, Rockefeller, Carnegie, so forth, were they robber barons or just captains of industry who were aggressive? And when I look at the group that you just mentioned, clearly mm-hmm. Google, robber barons to the nth degree.
Correct, and they have made an incredible profit, through this coronavirus pandemic, essentially eliminating a Main Street and becoming like the new go-to business. And I think I read recently that they're now establishing their own brick and mortar stores, you know, after they've eliminated the small brick and mortar stores who were their competition.
Well, that's part of what the pandemic lockdowns were about. Oh, these are essential businesses, the big box stores who quadrupled their profits and made record money while small business got destroyed. And see, small business could have done the same protocols as the big businesses. It was all a game to put these people out of business.
That's correct. And they took their PPP money. They didn't reinvest a lot of that money in the business. I'm talking about the larger groups or in their employees. They fired their employees and gambled in the stock market and invested in themselves. So they made themselves richer at our expense.
Yeah. Have you seen the articles on the net where they're saying that the so-called elite more than doubled their position financially after the lockdowns?
Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, you think it's
That's entirely true. I do. It's probably more than double. I mean, the market should not be in the state that it's in, but it's being propped up by the money, in part by the money that was given to them during the PPP settlement. Well, not settlements, but the contributions from the federal government to keep them afloat.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I can't believe that we're not seeing more small businesses banding together, or the remnants of small business, and attacking this. They're quiet, and they shouldn't be.
That's true. Maybe they're intimidated, or they could be in such a financial state where they're not in a position, to fight back.
I know. I feel like I've fought their battle for them. Real, I'm very serious. I mean, I have run articles on individual people, like ladies that own hair salons, for example, the one in Dallas that went to jail. And I'm looking at all this and I'm saying, okay, why aren't they flocking to people like me who are defending them and saying, let's get a unified voice here? They seem to be just accepting their fate.
They're very demoralized, possibly. And with all the negative, media attention, that has been given to, the Patriots, I'm not surprised. I'm sure it's intended to disempower them.
Well, let's give some attention to the people who are making the Patriots look bad through the Reichstag fire of January the 6th. And you have some information regarding Obama's role in this.
Yes, and I'm going to go back, again, to Maria Zach. I do have new information. But Maria Zack from Nations in Action had confirmed that Obama was working with the Italian Prime Minister to rig the election against Trump for 2020, and that the election was rigged in Italy. The money was laundered through the Vatican, and that the company that was involved in switching the votes via satellite was Leonardo S.p.A. The main lobbying firm that represented Leonardo is Ballard Partners, which was a leading fundraiser for Trump. They also employed a number of Biden and Obama characters, including a fellow by the name of Congressman Wexler, who crafted Obama's policies for the Middle East. They had Obama fundraisers and Biden fundraisers on staff. But the very kind of interesting connection that I was able to make is that in 2020, for the one time only, Ballard Partners and another group called the Group DC, represented the city of Washington DC, and prior to this point, they were engaging, they were working with defense contractors and different types of organizations. Ballard Partners, in particular, tends to when it did represent municipalities, those were located in Florida. So there was a small campaign contract or a small fee that was paid to Ballard, less than $5,000, in 2020. So that would have been a consultation fee. Their partner in representing Capitol Hill was the group, and the two individuals who were working on that project alongside Ballard Partners, which had rigged the election. And if you can anticipate that January 6th was organized to entrap patriots. It was intended to criminalize the patriotic movement, which Maria Zack said expressed to be the agenda that Obama was and globalists in general were concerned with rising nationalism, rising populism. And so they were trying to figure out how they could derail the movement. So that was, this was Obama's agenda. Ballard Partners, as we've discussed before, was working with Obama's people to advance their agenda by way of, on foreign policy and other matters. So the two individuals who were working for the group alongside Ballard Partners were both Obama allies. One was a gentleman by the name of Sadafi Henry, who was he worked in the Obama administration as the senior legislative affairs director for Biden. So he was there. He was a senior policy advisor for Obama, who managed his day-to-day operations. The other gentleman is Daryl Thompson, who was Obama's deputy chief of staff for intergovernment relations. He was he coordinated the labor unions, was chief of staff for Obama in the Senate, managed his day-to-day political operations. So you've got the two Obama alum who are working alongside Ballard Partners, and of course, Obama, his expertise is community organizing. So these characters are not, they don't generally represent cities, but they lobby Congress on behalf of big business, and they coordinate, the grassroots activities and other efforts that they need to kind of advance a policy agenda.
That's quite a mouthful there. You've really laid out the roster. So Let's go forward here. How did they coordinate Obama's activities behind what he did on January 6th?
Okay, there were a few points. One is that the Capitol Hill police, who opened the doors for the mob, if you will, to enter congressional chambers, the police were local police. They took their orders from the city of Washington, D.C. The city of Washington, D.C. was then being advised by lobbyists who had previously worked for Obama and who relied upon their influence on Capitol Hill through their connection with Obama. So,
okay.
I don't actually know exactly, you know, what their day-to-day operations were or what they actually did on January 6th, but they were working alongside Ballard Partners, the group that had represented the company that had rigged the election. And you've also got, at the same time, they're representing Facebook. Facebook had worked with Cambridge Analytica and Bannon to kind of manipulate the election on behalf of Ted Cruz back in 2016 when Ted Cruz failed to catch. They then worked on behalf of Donald Trump, somewhat unsuccessfully. Facebook is also working with the Atlantic Council to challenge conservative media, like to fact check. So that's what one of their clients. Bannon, I think as we discussed earlier, works for the Vatican, and Cambridge Analytica is a Rothschild-affiliated company.
Oh, boy. So, amazing.
I mean, so you can put two and two together. I mean, to find out exactly what they did, and I think it might be a thought to pull the lobbying records and to find out exactly what they advised Washington, D.C. to do on that occasion. But it was like the one time only that they represented Capitol Hill. And the case of Ballard Partners, it was for less than the $5,000. And somehow, you know, the Obama group had a more, you know, had a stronger role within whatever happened, you know, with you know, whatever DC's position was, what they decided to do on January 6th.
Do you have any information about their on the ground activities?
I do not. Just that they were the lobbying group. Lobbyists are involved in coordinating. They work with public relations firms, with grassroots organizations, you know, and they mobilize people. You know, so I would imagine that they're working with, you know, different community organizations. But I do not have, as of yet, I do not have the information on exactly what they did on January 6th. Just that the aspect of that the police who were involved in opening the barricades were taking orders from the city around this time.
So you think Bowser was involved?
I think
D.C.
so.
D.C. Mayor Bowser. I want to make sure we're clear about
correct.
What we're talking about.
I don't want to, I guess, you know, jump to any conclusions. Yeah, I can only state what is there. I do know that the people who were fomenting the insurrection on January 6th were the same people who were involved in the same network of lobbying firms that were involved in of switching the votes on during the election. They were involved in Trump's team working with Obama's team to advance Obama's foreign policy. They were capitalizing on opportunities made available through Obama. They were involved in switching the vote, and then here they appear again, you know, representing the city of Washington, D.C., when, you know, the local police took some very questionable actions. You can also see how Ted Cruz, for example, who was Cambridge Analytica's choice, was working with the Proud Boys, for example. The Proud Boys had stated that they were informants for the FBI. The Department of Justice was controlled by Obama. They had also said that they were in communication with Ted Cruz's office. Ted Cruz was involved with trying to get some type of accounting for the alleged election fraud before January 6th, after the alleged insurrection. He then began to say that, you know, he began to call those who participated terrorists. So he was kind of part of the agenda.
Yeah, he had to walk that one back pretty quickly, though, because his political career is over. There's no one from my side of the fence that will ever support Ted Cruz now, after what he said.
I think he showed his hand.
Yeah, in fact, Tucker Carlson called him on his show to confront him and Ted Cruz tried to backpedal, but as my dad used to say, the more you stir poop, the worse it stinks. And he came out of that stinking worse than when he went into the interview. So there's no way he's ever going to be a factor again. I think they can discard him. But, you know, he always was a problem. He was a problem for Trump. But then it's kind of like if you can't beat him, join him. So he started trying to sound like Trump. That's how I see his metamorphosis in the last 4 years. But, you know, I don't know if you know this about his wife, Heidi.
She worked for Goldman Sachs, I believe.
Yeah, a Goldman Sachs operative. Mm-hmm. But listen to this. She's on the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe he's a conservative? Give me a break.
I think he grandstands.
Exactly.
He lends the impression that he supports the Patriots, but he doesn't. If you follow what he does, he's aligned with the establishment.
He's an agent. He's an agent for them. There's no question. He's like, can I keep coming back to this? But it's true. Fox News is a controlled opposition. They donate maybe 0.1% of their coverage to the real problem in America, which is voter fraud. They're not doing enough with vaccine death, but they'll give you every other scandal to make the conservative public believe they're on their side. And they're a forum for Republicans that come and bitch and moan and go back to Congress and do nothing.
And then you have Sean Hannity, who is involved in the subsidized housing market, making a profit. I don't know how he has the time.
What does he do with this?
I don't know all the details, but I believe he was working with one of Trump's attorneys. I think it might have been Cohen. I think he has some type of a subsidized housing where he's the landlord. He's kind of collecting money from.
So he's doing business with an ex-Trump lawyer who's a jailbird.
I believe that's the one.
Cohen. I mean, Cohen's a bad dude. He's really bad. Wow. Sean, I'm disappointed in you. But he makes a good Patriot game, and then Trump goes on his show. He was on his show last night.
And he will never speak ill of Trump, I think, because he's financially involved with him. And Obama had Valerie Jarrett, and Valerie Jarrett was a slumlord.
I covered that. Garden Grove Apartments in Chicago. Yep.
There you go. There you go. Subsidized housing again.
Oh, she had some position with the Chicago city government, and at the time the Mayor Daley actually had to take her off of it because of the backlash of how bad the slum conditions were. They got public. And remember Valerie Jarrett? She's the one that in the 2012 election when Obama got reelected, we're making a list of everyone who's opposed us.
Yes. Was she involved in turning the IRS on conservative nonprofits?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. She sure was.
Interesting.
Well, Obama didn't make a move without consulting with Valerie Jarrett, who, by the way, her family is connected to terrorist organizations in Iran. Just thought I would mention that.
That's very interesting. And when Obama was advising Trump's team, he wanted to make sure that that Iran received money from Turkey in violation of U.S. sanctions.
Yeah. They're just a den of thieves. And we wonder why the country's in the position it's in today. I mean, people don't realize this, Susan. We are on the verge of being conquered and occupied by a hostile force that will kill as many Americans as they can.
We've got the treason from within.
Yeah, and it starts with Milley, too. I mean, you remember Milley's comment in the Afghan debacle? We're not going to do anything with China. That's ridiculous. We would tell the Chinese if we were going to attack them.
I could give them a heads up. You know, and of course that they're not going to do that because China was created by Wall Street. So it's their creation, and we passed all of our military technology over to them.
Was that a Cold War strategy where I know we wanted to keep the Cold War going for profit reasons with the military-industrial complex and the CIA cooperation in that matter?
Correct. on the one hand, we were, you know, selling weapons to the Soviets, and we were selling weapons to the Chinese and to Israel, and then we were pitting Russia, the Soviet Union, and China against each other to sell more weapons. And you're right, it was one big marketing scheme.
You know, Eisenhower saw through that very early on. I mean, in what was it, 1960, when he gave his farewell address, "Beware of the military-industrial complex. Its influence is unwarranted, meaning unconstitutional, and unprecedented, means never happened before." But it hasn't stopped. It's gotten worse.
It's gotten worse, and I think, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the percentage is, but it's something like, you know, maybe is it 90% of our budget goes to the military? You know, think about how, you know, what we could be doing with that money. Could it, you know, we could be investing in it in our people and in education and, you know, in business, you know, like, you know, Main Street. But instead, you know, it's going into like a war and death machine.
I said something once to a person from Germany, and they told me about their free education system for undergraduates for college. And I said, "How can you afford to do this?" "Well, we're not involved in multiple wars like you are."
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so much we could be doing for our people. But that's... I just reflect back, you know, this country's been steered by the wrong people for a long time. And it really goes back to the early days of the Industrial Revolution. If you just look at, and I know we're kind of digressing for a second, but Europeans typically get 6 weeks off for vacation. Americans get two. Europeans have paid maternity leave. America has nothing. And I'm not saying that I want to go totally socialist that way, but I'm saying the reason, like, the French can do this and we can't is because, what you just said, we spend so much money on our military.
You know, it's a completely different mentality in Europe. Here, you know, in the United States, we live to work, and we have so many bills and expenses. We're never entirely caught up. And I think, in a way, we're wage slaves. You know, we have to continue to labor in order to, you know, pay our ever increasing real estate taxes. Which, you know, even if you've paid off the mortgage on your home, you never completely own your home. You know, the taxes increase. Same with your vehicle and other assets you may hold. I think in Europe, they value life and family a lot more, where they work to live in a way where they're able to enjoy each other's company, take time to read, develop their mind, develop their passion. They keep us in America on a treadmill that it becomes very difficult for the American people to be aware of what's happening around them, to follow current events. And I think that in turn allows them to kind of keep us somewhat stupefied, where they're able to take advantage of us.
I think that's a perfect explanation. I really do. I think they keep us on a treadmill. They're exactly right. Well, we need to take the treadmill and do a quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, this is something I'm going to ask Susan to comment when we come out of the break here. But January 22nd, magic day, Mexico's joined the party. Truckers can't cross unless they're fully vaccinated. And that means products shipped to America, well, that's going to fall precipitously, triggering even more product shortages. And some of this now gets into the food realm. And in fact, excuse me, there are people I talk to that say that we are going to be eating spoiled food. And I'll give you the history of that once we're out of the break, because there is historical precedence for this in a tough economic time. So I think you better think about storable food. I mean, we're now up to 23 impediments to the food supply that I've drawn up. 23. Right now, because we're not in hyperinflation, we're just in severe inflation, but you got a company that hasn't raised their prices and they still have a sale, you can go with My Patriot Supply. And we're one of the few companies that did not sell out to the government when they bought up all the food. And it's available for the public. They don't want the public to be self-sufficient. They want the public to be dependent on government. Well, you can break that spell by making sure you have enough food. Now, Bob Griswold, resident expert on survival, says you need 2 years plus seeds, because seeds have to take over at some point. DHS and FEMA say 6 months. You have to do what you can do. But I'm telling you right now, for 25-year shelf life, for food that tastes fine, for food that's high in calories, which you want because you're eating survival food to supply, to survive, I should say, you really need to make a move on this now. There's lots of diversity in the food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Go to preparewithdave.com and look at the sale they have there and order in increments of the sale, and you'll save money all the way through. I cannot stress the importance of this. In fact, I'm going to give you the list right here. Food, water, guns, gold, ammo, natural medicine, tools, communication. And that's not a complete list. That's just the top veneer of what you need to have to get through what's coming. You are going to be starved and resource starved into submission by this administration if they get their way. They're already showing intentions in this direction, so please go to preparewithdave.com. Susan, I wanted to ask you here before we go into the next area we're going to talk about, but are you aware of this trucker situation? And let me just give you a quick background. Teddy Roosevelt made his fame because when the refrigerated car came in and they would have a refrigerated car break down and meat would spoil, they would treat it with dye and people started dying of botulism. And Teddy Roosevelt created the FDA because of this. And this really kind of propelled him into a position of trust with the American people. He was known as the trust buster, but people of the day would tell you, no, he made our food safe to eat. Well, what I'm hearing now is that the food is going to be in such a desperate situation crossing the border on both borders that grocers are going to have to make a decision. Are they going to serve food beyond the time that they should serve it, particularly produce? Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about this?
I know that the Canadian truckers are they're protesting, and I think the American truckers are going to be following suit because they're being having the vaccination forced upon them. I think there are also supply chain issues where the products are not being removed from the ships quickly enough. I think there are issues of not having enough people to do it, and I think they're also requiring truckers to be members of unions and therefore Democratic voters and campaign contributors before they're allowed to work. I don't know anything specifically about whether they're going to be serving us rotten food or not. My thought on this is that they may be trying to usher in lab-made food. Because they've been promoting bugs, which we of course would be horrendous to eat, but also to offer us lab made meat, lab made fruit and vegetables, which could be a new type of GMO product.
Wow, I think you just made a great point there. I because we know the agenda from the World Economic Forum is plants, seafood, bugs, and the fourth fake lab meat. Those are the four foodstuffs that they're saying we're going to have to eat. This may be the beginning of the ability to bring this in because we have such shortages.
That's a possibility, and it would also be in line with their Green New Deal to provide a more environmentally friendly type of product.
Well, that's where that came from, was the New Green Deal. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. That's... Yeah, and the whole thing with the produce, the way it was explained to me, was it's not that grocers are going to conspire to poison America. It's that individual grocers are going to make individual financial decisions to stretch the expiration dates out maybe beyond what they should so they don't throw away stuff they'd normally throw away, and they can make money in a declining profit industry. That's what I've been told.
And they may be increasing preservatives in food to keep them enable them to last longer. Those would, of course, poison us eventually. And I think they're also putting in a lot of sugars in food. I think sugars can also undermine our health. It's more than they're acknowledging.
Yeah, I just saw a thing from a cardiologist that talked about our farming, how it's changed with the advent of corporate farms. No more rotation of crops. They're killing the soil because they're planting too many crops too close together. And so the soil is so depleted right now that we don't get the nutrients that we need because the food eats the soil as it's growing.
Correct.
And if your soil's bad, well, then your food is bad. And this guy is the top cardiologist in the country, in the world. He developed all these open heart techniques. And I think his name is Gundy. And he's developed all these great techniques and strategies, Harvard educated, called in as a consultant on everything to do with open heart surgery. And he's saying, we're killing ourselves with the food. He said the reason that in the 50s, people didn't even follow a diet. They smoked and they drank and they ate fast food, but they were one third skinnier than we are. And he said it's because of the soil with the food. I
They were
think
getting
it's,
their nutrients.
yeah, exactly. But more to the point of what we're talking about, I think you're onto something here. This trucker shortage is going to lead, I think, to an ushering in of the fake lab meat.
That's a possibility. I remember during the coronavirus that the farmers were required to kill their livestock. I don't know if you remember that.
And that was totally unnecessary because
Unnecessary.
they don't transmit corona.
Correct.
Yeah, the Betsy the cow gives milk, but not corona. That was ridiculous. But they did do that because this was the attack on the food supply. Did you know that China owns 30 million American farm acres?
I didn't know it was that much. That's amazing.
30, yeah, Bill Gates is the number one private
Mm-hmm.
holder. China owns 30 million.
Wow.
That's a
That's
national
scary.
security risk. There's actually six states, one of them South Dakota, I forget the other five, but they have laws against foreign ownership of their land. So it's crazy what we're doing. Well, let's go to Bush and Obama and the Sarah and all that stuff.
Now, I know a lot of people were excited to see Nasera, just there, flash behind Trump at his recent rally in Arizona. Now, the elites are required to announce Nasera, just there, at least once a year. Now, whether they actually implement it is another matter. The Nasera, just there, has been a long time in making. Essentially, the powers that be have been found wanting. They have established color of law governments, color of law banks. They have stolen trillions, maybe more, from the people. They have reduced us to wage slaves, taken away our freedoms. And through Nasera, just there, they were required to begin to reverse what they had done. This was brought about through a class action in the 1980s over farmland and where their criminal banking practices were brought to light. They have I know that the federal government has been forced to implement the terms of Nasera Gisera. Bush Senior refused to do so. The Clintons refused to do so. Bush Junior had said that he would do so, and it was Nasera Gisera was going to launch, I believe, on September 12th, 2001, and we know what happened the day before. The documents concerning Nasera Gisera were held within the Twin Towers. The efforts were being coordinated at the Pentagon in the area that was struck. So I thought that was, very kind of interesting. According to some of the folks who are working on Nasera Gisera to have it implemented, they said that Bush Senior was offered over $1 trillion as a bribe to agree to implement it. He turned it down, wanted to continue with the New World Order agenda. When Obama became president, he learned about the trillions of dollars that are available in these prosperity programs, and he wanted his own cut. Like, he wanted, billions of dollars to be given to him, taken from these funds. And he is on board with Bush to thwart Nasera Gisera in any way that he can. So what we're seeing now is that Obama has teamed up with Bush and the Clintons. They're blocking the Nasera Gisera. They want to be able to, keep these funds for themselves and, for their partners. It's my impression, based upon what I've seen, that the Bush clan is financially backing the freedom movement in the United States to provide, you know, hope for the people, but that leads them away from, you know, from the steps that they need to take, you know, to restore their own freedoms and to force the government to return the funds that are due to them. So I think there are, according to the requirements on the federal government, they are to provide services and money and care for the elderly. They are to restore the environment, provide, you know, different new prosperity programs, and to invest in the people and their businesses. What they brought us instead were, you know, Greta Thunberg. They put infected people into retirement homes, which resulted in the death of the elderly. You know, they have forced hospital closures and created conditions, you know, that have resulted in the deaths of elderly people who are due money, you know, from these different programs that have been set aside for them. So I think that, you know, we need to be, I think, cognizant of exactly what's happening. I know that Trump's people have offered or have touted Nasera Jassera, but it's clear to me anyway that they are working with the Rothschilds, Trump's proximity to Wilbur Ross, who was his Commerce Secretary, is testament to that. Ross reorganized Trump's businesses. He handled his bankruptcies at a time when his partners wanted to push Trump out of the casino industry. Wilbur Ross kept him on board as a salesman. He thought he would be good in selling the agenda and on behalf of his investors. So Trump, even though he has done a lot of fantastic things, at the end of the day, he's beholden to the Rothschilds. And the Rothschilds had talked about bringing in a kind of an inclusive capitalism, a guaranteed income, but, you know, and this new great reset that would allow us to not to own anything. And as I think we discussed before the program, what we're seeing is these, you know, major investment banks, private equity firms that have become rich through you know, different schemes that the elites have had to redistribute money from the treasury, from the taxpayers to themselves, mm-hmm. are now in a position, you know, to buy real estate at, you know, to offer, you know, prices that are far above what the market would warrant. And through that appreciation, our taxes are, you know, are ever increasing, and it's becoming increasingly difficult for the average person to afford a home, forcing them either to downsize or to become renters. So, in essence, they're trying to advance an agenda that may, you know, seem on the surface to be benevolent, but what it does is it shores up the money, the power, the control within themselves. So we end up, you know, essentially living as a servant class or as dependents. You know, we can rent and own nothing and be happy. You know, they will provide for our every need. So I think it's more of communism under, you know, a different name, but it's, I don't think that what they're trying to do is in line with the true spirit of Nasera Jassera.
Yeah, well, it speaks to a couple things that I believe. They don't want us to have money. They'd rather flush it down the toilet. And the reason is wealth is relative. If I have a quarter and you have a dime, I'm rich and you're not. If we both have quarters, neither one of us are rich and I lose some power. And that's why they don't want us to have any money. But there's also something else, too, I've begun to wonder. There's no question that climate change strategies, their mitigation strategies, are based on fake science. But forget all that. Their strategies have one central theme: gain control of all business entities, all financial enterprises, under the guise of we must save the planet. When we look at this other stuff like Nasera Jassera, why are they going after a potential income of people on that end when they have the climate change coming?
Can you elaborate on what you mean? Like, what do you mean by going after people's income?
Well, in other words, people, we have potential income that's sitting out there that's being deprived from the people by the Bush people, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. So with Bush and Obama behind that movement, why are they working to deprive the people when it's only a matter of time until climate change has everyone under their thumb?
I think they don't want to give up the power. Bush was offered $1 trillion. I can't even imagine having $1 trillion. He was offered $1 trillion to release this Sarah Jacera, and to give up this New World Order agenda. He chose to keep the New World Order agenda remain on track. I think they want to have money and power. If they release the funds to us, we will have the freedom to do what we want. We'll no longer be under, their control. We can start our own business. We can, form our own communities. We'll have assets to do what we want to do. So I think it's more about control for them.
Okay. Well, so it's just like the second verse of the same strategy is climate change.
Okay, so climate change, I think on the one hand, if we were proper stewards of our environment, we would ensure that our waters are, that our springs are clear, we eliminate pollution. But they're not releasing the free energy technologies that are available. They pollute our water. They pollute our air.
Yeah.
And the as you've said, global warming is based on fake science. So it's less about helping the environment than it is on securing government contracts. I saw with an Indian country, for example, where the Indian tribes would be provided guaranteed subsidized housing. And then they would turn around and say, well, we have to make this housing energy efficient. They would then have, per tribe, receive millions of dollars in technology to weatherize their homes. And then more millions for solar power, for wind farms. The wind farms would kill the wildlife, the birds. It would not really provide enough energy to be properly sustainable. So it's more, I think the Green New Deal in a lot of ways is a way for them to generate more contracts for themselves, more money for themselves.
Okay.
Under the auspices of protecting the environment.
But if they can shut your lights off and keep you from driving to work, I mean, that's pretty strong control too.
Yes, it is. And I think that's part of it. They want to be able to limit our consumption. So we might only be allowed to use a limited number of gallons of water a day or a limited amount of energy per day. And then if you go beyond that, you could be fined. And I think they're also trying to have us charged per mile that we drive.
Oh, London just instituted that. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Vehicle mileage tax, yeah.
The BMT. Mileage tax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just read that 2 days ago. It came in on the same day that Boris Johnson, because he got caught partying, had to relax all the mandates. And that also came in the VMT at the same time. So they're charging. People in London aren't going to be greatly affected by it, but people in the outlying areas in the UK will be.
So eventually they want to force people out of their cars into electric cars, and then ultimately, the electric cars will enable them to track and trace everywhere you go, to find out how long you stay at what types of businesses and for what purpose, and ultimately allow them to control those vehicles.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, but here's the problem. Electric cars sound good to me if you had the battery problem taken care of, and if you had spare parts taken care of, and if you had enough docking stations taken care of. They don't have any of the infrastructure in place to support this move that they're already forcing on the people. Just look at the car lots today. This shortage is clearly benefiting Biden's plans to get rid of gas-guzzling cars, as they call them. The lots are empty. Used car prices are up 40%, 27% for new cars. No deals, and there are shortages. So
that's true. I don't know if you saw, I think around the Christmas holidays, there was a big pileup. I think it was on the 95 freeway in Virginia in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
There were two trucks jackknifed. Can you imagine if all of those cars, which were stranded for 24 hours, were electric? How would you clear that up? You think that, within that time period, the batteries would be dead? You're looking at a massive cleanup. I don't think it's practical. We don't have the infrastructure in place. Yeah, as you've indicated.
Well, human life is not their concern. All I have to say is look at Afghanistan and the withdrawal for the evidence of that with this administration. It's just absolutely insane what's
Shameful.
happening. This Nasera Jasera, what would be the, I'm trying to think of how to ask you this. What's the source of the money and how would it be transferred to the people? What's the plan?
Okay, that's a little complicated, but I guess
Okay,
essentially,
just give me a thumbnail sketch on it.
okay, so I guess as of 2013, our debt was acquired, I believe, by the IMF. Like it was so that the people no longer owe any money, and so what we have been absolved of our debts according to Nasera Jasera. So we should no longer be taxed. But I think that they have been trading off of, and I know this sounds crazy, mentioning, but they've been trading off of our birth certificates. They've taken life insurance policies out on each of us, and they've been kind of trading us on the market like commodities. They've made a fortune in the process, and so we're not actually like when attorneys and accountants began to look into some of their practices, they discovered that far from being in debt, America, a lot of foreign countries actually owe us money, that we actually have, an incredible reserves. So the money is there. And I think the other question was where would it come from? I know it hasn't been released, but they have the money. It's not it's owed to us. But how what was the second part of that question?
Yeah, well, what's the source of the money? And so what I'm hearing is basically it's a debt relief program, suspension of all owed monies to the government and to whatever. But what's the source of the money? Is it underground minerals?
I think it's actually it is asset. That could be part of it. I'm not familiar with that aspect of it, that they are, they're trying to assess a value on those minerals and paying us for them. I think this is money that they have taken from us by, trading on our assets, like creating color of law entities. So I think essentially since the Civil War, the corporation of the United States that was established by Benjamin Franklin, as a government contracting service, was bankrupted. And so they reorganized the United States under a new corporation, and they put the American people as chattel, like, as surety. So we had been generating revenue for them based upon our very existence. And so that our labor has generated that revenue, what we've invested, what we've done, our contributions, our actual, physical, I guess physical labor and our assets have been kind of taken away from us through various illegitimate tax schemes, illegitimate trades. They've plundered, the Social Security funds, pension funds. So there were a lot of financial scams that they had to redistribute our assets to themselves. And since they were illegitimate, that money then belongs to us. I may not be describing that
No, I get
in
it. I get it
terms
entirely.
of.
But getting them to part with it is a horse of a different color. I do know. I wrote an article at one time, and I don't remember the numbers. But quickly, we have enough underground resources and minerals and so forth to more than pay off the national debt. And I
Trillions of
speculated the
dollars.
reason that we don't is because China has the hold on it.
That's a possibility. I know that Greenberg Traurig, a firm that represented Bush, Cheney, and the Florida recount, they are the correspondence address for a group called the Council for Energy Resource Tribes that controls trillions of dollars
Oh yeah.
natural resources on native lands.
Yeah, I've heard that. We're gonna have to go into that on another show, but right now I gotta give you due credit. We need to do another part on this because I want to definitely hit corporations like Vanguard and BlackRock and so forth and talk about the Native American reservations. But quickly, tell people how they can follow your good work.
Thank you. My website is www.susanbradford.org, and I have links to my my books and background and how to get a hold of me. If you're interested in reaching out to me, you can do so through the website as well.